Stories of Journey to the West, Chapter 66.
So Wukong makes this huge journey. He flies all the way to Wudang Mountain, that's in South Champevipa. And choosing Wudang, that feels really significant, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely. The text describes it with such reverence. A great stronghold, a divine peak. You get this vivid picture. You know, soaring peaks like Furong Peak, special plants like Langmai flowers, cranes, phoenixes. It's painted as a truly immortal land. Going there signals Wukong knows he needs top-tier, almost ultimate help.
And who's there? The True Warrior. Also called the God of True Martial or the Grand Master.
Yeah.
His origin is pretty wild, too. Born after his mother dreamt of swallowing the sun, pregnant for 14 months. But, okay, fascinating lore aside, why him? Why is the True Warrior the one Wukong seeks out in this absolute crisis?
Right, that's the crucial part. It's not just that he's powerful, though he definitely is. It's his whole deal, his cosmic role. He gave up being a king to pursue spiritual cultivation, ascended to heaven, got his title True Warrior straight from the Jade Emperor. He's linked with the tortoise and snake forms, and his job, essentially, is cosmic pest control. He controls all spirits, cuts down demons, like from the beginning of time to the end.
Yeah. He's supposed to be the ultimate demon slayer, living up there in his peaceful Taihi palace. If anyone could handle this yellow-browed demon, you'd think it'd be him.
So Wukong gets there, explains the whole mess, how desperate things are, and the True Warrior, he acknowledges his own track record. He's like, yeah, I subdued evil spirits up north, cut down demons everywhere. He's got the decrees from the Jade Emperor, from the primordial Heavenly Venerable. He has the authority.
But there's a hesitation there, isn't there? The True Warrior seems a bit conflicted. He mentions needing a specific heavenly decree, usually, to mobilize his forces. He doesn't want to step on the Jade Emperor's toes by acting without permission.
Celestial bureaucracy, even at this level.
Could be. Or maybe something else. He also says he doesn't think this particular demon, the one on the path west, is really a great harm in the, you know, grand cosmic sense, which is interesting.
Yeah, kind of downplaying the crisis Wukong's facing.
Right. But he doesn't just send Wukong away empty-handed.
No, he does offer help, but it's specific. He sends two of his main guys, General Tortoise and General Snake, and also the five great divine dragons. So, not the True Warrior himself, but definitely some heavy hitters. His top lieutenants. Okay, so Wukong flies back to the small lion temple. He's feeling pretty good now, right? Got his powerful new squad with him. And Yellowbrow, the demon, he's surprised, sees Wukong is back and with these very unusual-looking companions. Tortoise and snake generals, divine dragons.
And these new guys, they make quite an entrance. They announce themselves loud and clear. We're from Wudang Mountain, sent by the True Warrior. Their mission, capture the demon, free Tang San Zhang, free the captured stars. And they basically tell the demon, surrender now or we wreck the place. No subtlety there.
And the fight is on. The description is intense. Half an hour of pure chaos. The five dragons are making it rain, creating clouds. The two generals are kicking up dust and earth. Wukong's in the thick of it with his staff. It's water and fire against monster, weapons surrounding spirits. Shouts so loud they scare wolves and tigers, shake ghosts and gods. You could almost hear it.
It sounds like an overwhelming force, doesn't it? But then the moment everything changes, the demon Yellowbrow, maybe seeing this onslaught is too much head-on, he reaches for it, he brings out the white cloth bag again.
And Wukong sees it. He knows exactly what that means. He shouts a warning, desperate, be careful. He's learned his lesson about that bag.
But here's the tragic part. The text says the new allies, the generals and dragons, they didn't know what be careful meant. Not in this specific context, anyway. They probably just thought Wukong was saying, you know, fight hard, be alert. They kept fighting, pressing forward, relying on their raw power.
They didn't have Wukong's firsthand painful experience with that specific weapon.
Exactly. They lacked that crucial piece of intel.
And then, poof, the demon throws the bag. Wukong, knowing the danger, instantly flies up, escapes to the Nine Heavens. Smart move. The True Warrior's powerful team? General Tortoise, General Snake. The five divine dragons.
All gone. Sucked into the bag, just like everyone else before them. They get tied up, thrown in a cellar with the others. Complete reversal. It just smacks you in the face, doesn't it?
Wukong's in a terrible state.
Yeah.
How does the source actually paint this picture? I mean, compared to the usual, you know, cheeky monkey king.
Well, it hits hard right away. Describes him as feeling listless, regretful, just slumped on a mountaintop. This isn't the Wukong we normally see.
Wow.
He's deeply distressed. His master, Tang San Zhang, his fellow disciples, even a whole bunch of heavenly beings, all snatched by this yellow-browed monster.
It's why the source really leans into Wukong's emotional state here. And he's just slumped on a mountain peak, the text says, as if sleeping.
Completely checked out. It's a Wukong we basically never see. Defeated. Still.
It really humanizes him, though, doesn't it? Mm. Seeing that even someone like Wukong, this cosmic powerhouse, can just hit a wall.
Absolutely. Feeling totally overwhelmed, maybe like the obstacle is just too big this time. It's not just being tired, it's a crisis.
A crisis of power, maybe purpose. And then, right when he's in this deep funk,
this voice appears.
Exactly. A voice cuts through. And it belongs to the day duty officer, part of the system.
Doing his rounds, basically.
And he does not mince words, does he? He just lays it out there. Great sage, stop pretending to sleep.
Oof.
Quickly go seek rescue. Your master's life, only a short time left. Talk about blunt. No sugarcoating at all.
Wow. Just straight to the point.
But Wukong's reaction isn't...
No, he kind of explodes, right?
Totally. He lashes out, calls the officer a hairy deity, which is quite something, accuses him of being greedy for blood offerings, mm-hmm. not doing his job.
And even threatens to hit him.
He does. It's such a strong reaction to someone just delivering bad but vital news. What's going on there? Why so angry? Especially when he's already down.
Well, I think it hits right at his pride, you know? Ah. He's caught vulnerable, slumped, defeated. And then this, let's be honest, probably minor official in his eyes, calls him out directly.
Tells him to stop pretending.
Exactly. It's a huge blow to his ego. So he lashes out. The hairy deity thing, it's pure dismissal, projecting his own frustration onto the messenger because he hates being seen like this.
So the great sage is basically having a bit of a tantrum.
You could say that, yeah. A very high-stakes tantrum. But what's really brilliant is the officer's response.
Right. He doesn't fight back.
No, he handles it perfectly.
Yeah.
A real masterclass in... Well, celestial diplomacy. He says, great sage, you are the immortal of joy in the human realm. What sorrow do you have?
That's quite profound. That's...
It is. It's not just calming him down. It's reminding Wukong of who he is.
Yeah.
His purpose, his divine nature, your joy, not sorrow. Get up.
Without being preachy about it, just stating a fact about him.
Precisely. And connecting this little exchange to the bigger picture,
yeah.
It really shows how even the strongest figures sometimes need that firm push.
Wukong's reaction to this. He's lamenting how powerful this monster is.
There's that line where he talks about being ashamed, right?
Yes. He says he's ashamed to go up to heaven and too embarrassed to enter the ocean treasury. He feels he can't face Guanyin or the Buddha.
Because his previous request for help led to those helpers getting captured too, he feels responsible.
Exactly. He says, how can I ask for help again? He genuinely believes he's run out of options. No way to ask for help. It's such a human moment, that despair.
It really is.
But Gung Cao tell Wukong.
He explains that he and other gods were under secret orders from a bodhisattva to protect Tang Sanzang. They couldn't just abandon their post.
Oh, okay. That makes sense.
And he confirms the situation. Tang Sanzang and the disciples hanging in the palace corridor. Grim.
Wow. And the others. The gods, the dragons.
All the stellar gods, plus the dragon gods, tortoise, and snake, imprisoned in a cellar. So Wukong gets the full... awful picture.
Okay, so bad news, but at least it's clear news. And then Gung Cao offers the crucial suggestion, the new hope.
Exactly. He points Wukong towards a new potential ally, the great Saint Goshiwang Bodhisattva, a really powerful figure.
Located where, again?
At Yui Mountain in Binqing. That's modern-day Sishu, down in Nanshan Buzu. And the source stresses this bodhisattva's great magical powers.
Right, and didn't he have a specific past victory mentioned?
Yes. Crucially, he subdued the Water Mother Empress. This detail hints that maybe this bodhisattva has the right kind of power for this tricky, bag-wielding demon, mm-hmm. not just brute force.
A specialist, maybe.
Oh.
So with this thread of hope, Wukong heads straight for Yizhou Mountain.
Mm-hmm.
What's the place like, according to the source?
Oh, the source gives it quite the description. Paints a picture of spiritual grandeur, you know, highlights its location. South, near Jianjin, north bordering the Huai River. Strategic.
And lots of temples and natural beauty.
Absolutely. Mentions Rune Temple, Glass Spring, Apricot Blossom Garden, places with real resonance. And the centerpiece is the Great St. Chan Temple.
With that pagoda.
Yeah, towering pagoda, piercing the clouds, 1,000 feet high. It really sets the stage. This is a place of immense spiritual power. You expect someone formidable here.
Which makes the welcome almost.
Yes.
Anticlimactic. In a good way. He arrives, and they're just waiting for him.
Right. Great Saint Goshiwang Bodhisattva and his disciple, Little Prince Zhang, they already know Wukong's coming. Meet him right at the gates. No messing around.
Speaks volumes about their awareness, their power.
It really does. So Wukong lays it all out, the yellow broad monster, the golden symbols from before, and of course the main problem, the cloth bag.
He explains how everyone keeps getting captured, stresses how urgent it is to rescue his master, get those scriptures to China, a desperate plea.
Mm-hmm. But the Bodhisattva, he has a reason he can't go himself, which is fascinating.
There's this reason.
He says it is early summer and the Huai River is flooding, practical. And he adds he's just subdued the water ape great saint and needs to keep an eye on things, basically, divine responsibilities.
Can't just drop everything, even for Wukong. So what's the solution?
Instead of going himself, he sends his disciple, Little Prince Zheng, along with his four great generals.
Ah, the new champions. He entrusts the mission to them.
Exactly. It's like passing the torch or testing the student, a new generation stepping up.
So they head back. Wukong, Little Prince Zheng, the four generals,
right,
back to the Little Layan Monastery, ready for round, what is it now, three?
Something like that. And these new guys have specific weapons.
What do they bring?
Little Prince Zheng has a Chubai spear, and the generals wield Kunlu swords, and Zheng, he's got confidence. Steps right up to the monster.
Challenges him directly.
Oh, yeah. Introduces himself, states his mission. But then, well, then we get this amazing self-introduction from him in poetic form.
This part is incredible. Tell us about it. His backstory is something else.
It really is. He says he's from the Flowing Sand Kingdom in the West, son of the king, had some childhood illness, sought longevity.
And got cured by half a grain of cinnabar.
All right.
Then chose cultivation over being a king. Achieved immortality.
Exactly. Immortality and eternal youth in his skills list.
Wow. Yeah, what can he do?
Catching fog, seizing wind, subduing water monsters, catching dragons, taming tigers, guarding mountains. I mean, it sounds perfect for dealing with tricky demons.
Totally. And his specific tools.
His Chubai spear can bind monsters, and his plain black robe can subdue demons. It's like the source is saying, here he is, the perfect counter. He's known locally as Little Zheng.
He seems tailor-made for this fight, which, knowing this story, probably means trouble.
Huh. You might be right. The source is definitely setting us up. This detailed intro makes the next part even more impactful.
But first, the demon gets a word in. Mocks him, right?
Yeah. The yellow-browed monster basically says, why risk your immortal life listening to Wukong? And kind of jabs at him, suggesting his skills are maybe just for, you know, water stuff. Trying to get in his head.
Classic villain move.
Yeah.
But the fight starts anyway.
Oh, it's fierce. Zheng, the generals, Wukong, they all attack. But that monster, his power is something else. His weapon, that short, soft wolf tooth club.
Yes, what about it?
The source calls it a Buddhist treasure, Fo Zong Bao.
A Buddhist treasure. That's hugely significant. Not just a powerful weapon, but spiritually charged. Yeah. Maybe even sacred.
Exactly. It implies a different kind of power. Something almost untouchable by normal means. Seems completely impervious, even to swords and spears.
So the fight is intense. But the heroes aren't really making headway against this treasure club.
Pretty much. The power dynamic is still way off.
And then, inevitably, the familiar threat returns.
Despite the new champion, despite the fierce battle, the demon pulls out the cloth bag again.
Oh no, and Wukong sees it coming.
He shouts a warning, be careful everyone, Louise Ixi.
But the others don't know. They haven't faced the bag.
Tragically, no. Little Prince Zheng, the generals, they just don't get the warning. They don't understand what's about to happen.
Right.
The slippery sound, that's how the source describes it. Swoosh. Little Prince Zheng and the four generals are bagged.
Captured. Bagged. Again, after that whole introduction. Yeah. All those powers.
Yeah.
Just gone.
It's almost darkly comic, isn't it? All that buildup, all that potential, neutralized instantly.
Only Wukong gets away.
Only Wukong. Because he knew. He'd seen it before. He manages to escape. Just barely.
And the demon.
Returns to his fake temple victorious once more, binds the new captives, throws them in the cellar with the others, seals it up tight.
Wow. The cycle just repeats. Wukong is just shattered, isn't he? He's just seen his master, Tang San Zhang, captured.
Wow.
And the generals, Little Prince Zhang, all of them gone, nabbed by this really formidable demon. And Wukong, the great sage equal to heaven, he's left alone. Literally heartbroken. And he has this moment, this lament. He really breaks down. He's basically saying, Master, you know, ever since I took this path, I promised to protect you. Thought it'd be smooth sailing, but now these monsters, nothing works. 100 strategies, useless. All my efforts, running east and west for help, totally in vain. It's raw.
Yeah, that vulnerability, it's absolutely key. It really reminds you that even Wukong, the great sage, has limits. He's not invincible. It strips away that usual bravado, you know?
Yeah.
And it perfectly sets the stage for someone else to step in. It shows the emotional depth you can find in these old stories. It's not just action.
And then, right when he's at his lowest, this figure appears. Mm. It gets really interesting here, almost out of nowhere.
Yes. It's quite dramatic. The text says a rainbow cloud descends, there's heavy rain, and then poof, this figure emerges. And the description is so vivid. Big ears, a square face, full shoulders and belly. A plump body, a joyful expression, clear eyes. Get the picture. Very distinct. He's called the first venerable one in the Pure Land, basically top tier, and instantly recognizable as Namo Maitreya, the laughing monk.
The laughing monk. And Wukong's reaction, that tells you everything, doesn't it? Even being the great sage, he hits the dirt, bows low, apologizes profusely for not, like, getting out of the way fast enough.
Exactly. That immediate deference, it speaks volumes about Maitreya's status. You know this is a big deal.
Okay, so who is this demon then? The one causing all this chaos? The one who even got the better of Wukong?
Right, so Maitreya drops the bombshell. He tells Wukong straight up, the demon is actually my yellow-browed boy who strikes the chime.
His attendant?
His own attendant, yeah. Apparently, the kid ran off on the third day of the third month while Maitreya was busy at the Yuanxi meeting, some important celestial conference. And not only did he run off, he nicked Maitreya's personal treasures.
Took his stuff.
Took his stuff. And he's been running around falsely pretending to be Buddha, causing absolute mayhem.
And that terrifying bag, the Da Bower, the one that kept sucking everyone up, even Wukong.
That's actually Maitreya's own Huchen bag. It's also called the Renzong bag or human seed bag.
Yeah.
Seriously powerful artifact.
Wow.
And the big scary weapon, the wolf tooth club. Just Maitreya's mallet for hitting the chime.
His chime mallet.
Yeah.
So the demon's power wasn't even his own.
Not at all. It's entirely based on these stolen goods. Without them, he's just, well, the yellow-browed boy.
So Wukong hears all this, and he's, like you said, understandably, a bit miffed.
Yeah.
He basically calls Maitreya out, right? Good laughing monk. Like, seriously, your household management sucks.
Huh, pretty much. He accuses him of letting his attendant run wild with cosmic-level weapons. But Maitreya's response is fascinating. He admits, yeah, my negligence, acknowledges the mistake.
Okay. Fair enough.
But then he widens the lens. He says, look, your master and the disciples, their demonic obstacles aren't finished yet. He says 100 spirits descend to the world and basically they should suffer. This is part of the journey.
Whoa. Yes. So it's not just an accident caused by a runaway attendant. It's like fated suffering.
That's the implication. It raises this big question. Is it just negligence or is this suffering a necessary trial, part of their path, something they have to go through to progress spiritually?
That definitely reframes the whole situation. So, okay, Maitreya is here to clean up the mess, but Wukong's got to be thinking,
yeah,
this demon, even with stolen gear, is tough, and Maitreya seems unarmed.
Exactly. Wukong's skeptical. But Maitreya has this incredibly clever, almost roundabout plan. No brute force involved. She explains he's already set something up, a little straw hut and a melon field down by the hill. The plan is all about luring the demon there.
Okay, a melon field. How does Wukong fit in?
Wukong's job is crucial. He has to go pick a fight with the demon again.
Okay.
But, and this is the key part he's told specifically, allowed to lose, but not to win.
Lose. Wukong has to lose.
Deliberately. He needs to lose the fight and then lead the demon, make him chase him right to that melon field.
All right, lure him to the melons. Then what?
Well, Maitreya explains that all his melons in the field are still unripe. Except for one, Wukong's special task is to transform himself into a big, ripe, juicy-looking melon.
Get eaten. He's going to let the demon eat him.
That's the plan. The demon will get hungry, see the one ripe melon Wukong and Maitreya will offer it to him. Once Wukong's inside, bam, he causes absolute chaos, tumbling around, kicking, punching, whatever monkey kings do inside a demon's stomach.
Right, create a massive internal distraction.
Exactly. While the demon's completely preoccupied with the world's worst indigestion, Maitreya can sneak in, grab his Huxian bag back, and nab the boy.
It's ingenious and kind of hilarious. But Wukong, being Wukong, he has questions, right? Practical one.
Oh, yeah. Two big ones immediately pop into his head. First, okay, I turn into a melon. How are you, Maitreya, going to know which melon is me in a whole field?
Good question.
And second, maybe more importantly, why would this demon, who normally just sucks me into his bag instantly, suddenly decide to chase me all the way to some random melon field? It doesn't fit his usual strategy.
Right. The bag is his go-to move. Why change now?
Maitreya handles the first concern easily. Total confidence. He just says, I am the venerable one who governs the world with high wisdom eyes. How could I not recognize you?
Okay, fair. He's Maitreya.
No matter what you transform into, I will know. Basically, don't worry. My divine vision sees through disguises. It reassures Wukong.
But that second question is the real puzzle. The luring part. How does that work?
Ugh. This is where the subtle magic comes in. It's really unique. Maitreya tells Wukong, hold out your left hand. Then Maitreya dips his right index finger in divine water from his mouth and writes a character on Wukong's palm, the character Jin, which means like prohibition, restraint, a binding spell.
A magic character on his hand. And then...
simple instruction. Clench your fist tight. Then when you're in front of the demon, just open your hand. Release the fist right in his face.
And that's it. That's the trick.
That's the trick. Maitreya assures him the moment Wukong does that, the demon will just follow him. He'll be compelled to follow Wukong straight to the melon patch.
Wow. So it's not about outfighting him. It's about this tiny magical restraint that changes the demon's behavior completely.
Precisely. It's the hidden key to the whole strategy. Sun Wukong returning to face the Demon King, and he's all alone.
Yeah, which is kind of surprising, right? You'd expect backup.
Definitely. It's just him standing there. So what's the demon's first reaction, seeing Wukong by himself like that?
Well, the Demon King, he can barely, you know, contain his contempt. He just dismisses Wukong completely.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
He genuinely believes Wukong is, the text says, basically out of options and exhausted.
Okay.
And
right.
Nowhere left to ask for help. He figures Wukong is definitely coming to his doom.
Wow. Pure arrogance.
Total overconfidence. And it's absolutely key. You know, it sets the stage for everything that follows. Classic villain mistake.
Right. Underestimating the hero, he's so sure of himself. The demon even starts mocking Wukong, right? For fighting with one hand.
He does. He agrees to a real fight without his magic treasures, specifically his Ahuchin bag.
Which is like his ultimate weapon, right?
Pretty much. So agreeing not to use it, thinking he's being all honorable.
Little does he know, that closed fist isn't weakness at all. The Sun Wukong releases hand directly in front of the demon.
Exactly. That's the trigger. That's what activates the whole thing. And it highlights a theme you see a lot in Journey to the West. All thanks to that little character on Wukong's palm.
So the demon thinks he's setting fair terms, but he's already been, like, magically handicapped.
Completely. He doesn't stand a chance on these terms.
So Wukong releases his fist. The character takes effect. What happens to the demon then? Like, immediately.
Boom. Instantly, he's restricted. He literally can't even think about retreating.
Can't retreat.
Nope. And critically, he can't use his bag. He's stuck just using his physical weapon, the duo, his wolf tooth club.
Wow. So he's forced into this close combat fight he wasn't really prepared for mentally or magically.
Exactly. It's an immediate crippling disadvantage. And the best part is he's totally clueless about why. He just feels compelled to fight this way.
That's brilliant. Wukong's fighting with one hand, metaphorically speaking, but it's the demon who's actually incapacitated without realizing it.
Precisely. So Wukong, he feigns a move, makes like he's losing, and then Ru retreats, pretending defeat, leading the demon on a chase.
Okay, classic Wukong move. Lure him away. Where do they end up?
Right into a...
a melon field. Seriously.
A melon field. And this is where Wukong's quick as a flash. He does a roll and transforms into a...
a big melon.
A big, ripe melon. The text even says it's light and sweet.
He turns into a melon. That's just peak Wukong.
Isn't it? And then... right on cue, Maitreya appears, but he's disguised as a Sioux.
A melon farmer. Of course he is.
Comes out of a little Sioux, a thatched hut nearby. The demon chasing Wukong. He's thirsty now.
Naturally.
And asks the farmer for a ripe melon. And Maitreya, using both hands very politely.
Hands in the Wukong melon.
Gives him the melon that is actually Sun Wukong.
Oh my goodness. Does the demon suspect anything?
Not a thing. The text says he doesn't investigate the situation at all. He just opens his mouth and bites. He literally bit off more than he could chew.
Literally. Which tells you a lot about how Wukong often wins, doesn't it? It's not always head-on clashes.
Right. It's cunning, shape-shifting, using the enemy's own desires, like thirst against them.
Exactly. He becomes a Trojan horse, basically. And Maitreya facilitates the whole thing. The demon just sees a melon, wants a melon, eats the melon. Simple.
until it's not simple anymore. So Wukong is now inside the demon. What's the plan?
Okay, this is where it gets messy. Wukong seizes the moment, rolls and drills into the throat. Ugh.
Yep, straight down. And once he's inside, Wukong just lets loose. He starts
manipulating limbs to scratch intestines and cut the belly. Oh, that's gruesome.
It is. And he's doing tumbles and handstands or cartwheels. Just chaos inside. The text says, basically letting him wreak havoc inside.
Just total internal demolition.
Utterly humiliating and, you can imagine, excruciatingly painful. An internal assault like no other.
Yeah, I can only imagine. The demon must be in agony.
Oh, completely. Hey, grimacing, tears streaming. He's rolling around the melon field.
Like a what?
Like a threshing floor, just rolling in pain, crying out. Oh,
enough. Enough. Who will save me? Wow. Broken. Completely broken. It's a masterclass in psychological and very physical torment from the inside out.
And at this low point, the mastermind reveals himself.
Exactly. Maitreya drops the melon farmer disguise, reveals his true, radiant form.
What does he say?
Just calls the demon Ease. Evil creature, stern, powerful.
And the demon's reaction?
Instant recognition. He immediately kneels, clutching his stomach, begging for mercy.
Understandable.
And Maitreya then confiscates the demon's gear, the ocean bag and his percussion hammer, completely disarmed.
Okay, so demon down, helper revealed. But Wukong, he's still inside, right? Is he done?
Not quite. Even with Maitreya there and the demon begging, Wukong is apparently still
randomly digging and pounding.
Yeah, with a left punch, a right kick. He's really driving the point home.
He wants to make sure this lesson really sticks.
Seems like it. Maitreya has to tell him to stop again.
Okay, no.
So Wukong finally tells the demon to open wide so he can get out.
And he jumps out, ready for another swing.
He jumps out and, yeah, looks like he's about to finish the demon off for good. But Maitreya acts fast.
How so?
He quickly scoops the demon up and puts him right into that confiscated Hushin bag. Conflict finally over.
Phew. Okay, battle won. Demon bagged. Now for the cleanup.
Right. Gotta restore order. Maitreya questions the now captured demon about the other stolen item, the jor, the golden symbols.
What's the demon's excuse?
Oh, he blames Wukong, of course. Says Wukong broke them.
Cool.
And reveals that Maitreya, the broken gold pieces, are back at the lair on the Temple Lotus platform.
So they have to go back to the demon's lair.
Yep. Maitreya and Wukong head back. They find the Angay. The mountain gate is tightly shut.
How do they get in?
Maitreya just uses a pointer from his hammer, opens it right up. Easy peasy for a Buddha.
And inside, is it empty?
No. Inside, the Joryadu, the little demons, are trying to scatter, trying to flee now that their boss is gone.
And Wukong's reaction?
Predictable Wukong. Sees one, hits one, just mops the floor with them.
How many?
Kills about 500 to 700 minor demons.
Wow. Thorough.
Very. And as they die, they revert to their true forms. Shide. Mountain spirits, tree monsters, and beast demons, bird devils. A real cleansing of the place.
Then the symbols.
Right. Maitreya gathers up the broken gold fragments. He breathes immortal ki on them. Recites an incantation.
And
just like that, the burst share are restored. A complete pair again. Magic.
Incredible. Divine restoration.
Then Maitreya's job is done. He departs for the Western Paradise, Sukhavati.
Okay, so Maitreya leaves. What about the others? Tripitaka, Pigsy, Sandy.
Wukong goes and frees them. They're safe now. And Pigsy, naturally.
Food.
Food. He's been locked up and starving. He immediately finds half a pot of the demon's prepared lunch.
And eats it all.
Well, he eats a good chunk before sharing with the others. Classic Pigsy. Always thinking of his stomach first.
You gotta love him. So Wukong then explains everything to Tung Sanzong. The whole crazy melon plan.
He does. He recounts the entire story, making sure to mention all the help he got. It wasn't just him.
Right. Highlighting the teamwork.
Exactly. He mentions help from the Urge, ancestor tortoise and snake, Thiege, great sage, borrowing the crown prince from Wudang, and of course Maitreya's massive role.
It really shows that even Wukong, you know, with all his power, needs this whole network of allies.
Absolutely. It's a collaborative quest. Tang Sanzong is incredibly grateful, naturally, and then asks about the other gods who were captured.
Oh, yeah, the ones the demon imprisoned earlier. Where are they?
Wukong knows the Aegyo, Daejudi Gunskao. told him earlier they were in the cellar. So Wukong and Pigsy go open the cellar and free all the imprisoned deities.
More thank yous, I imagine.
Oh, yes. Tang Sanzan bows deeply in thanks to all the rescued gods. Everyone's safe. Everything's accounted for.
So, putting everything back in order now, sending everyone home.
That's the next step. Wukong very systematically sends all the divine helpers back where they belong.
Like who?
The five dragons and two generals back to Wudang Mountain, the little Prince Xing and his four generals to Binqing. The 28 constellations go back to heaven, and the Jidi, Garing Guardians, return to their own realms. Order restored.
Okay, allies thanked and dismissed. Time to rest.
Yes, the group rests up, feeds the white horse, can't forget the horse, and gets ready to leave the next morning.
But there's one last thing they do, isn't there, before they actually leave?
There is. A final, very significant act. They set fire to the entire demon lair.
Everything.
Everything. The treasure building, the precious throne, the high pavilion, the lecture hall, all completely burned to ashes.
Wow. Scorched earth. Why? That seems intense.
It's symbolic. It's not just about destruction. The text says it signifies this dong.
Which means?
Escaping the danger without worries or attachments, eliminating calamities and obstacles, and truly continuing their journey unencumbered body and soul.